This is episode 5, the Hard Questions Only podcast. I'm your host, Thomas Edgman. A couple things have sprouted up of note in the past week. One of which is the Minnesota National Guard gearing up to mobilize ahead of Floyd trial. It's a OAN article title, which interestingly, OAN is the only one that I saw mention anything about it, but make of that what you will, I guess. I definitely feel like there's going to be some unrest if this guy gets anything less than, a murder charge. I'm not a lawyer, so can't articulate good reasons for giving him first versus second or anything like that, but regardless of, I see a lot of people like try and chalk up George Floyd's death to like being on drugs at the time or whatever. Maybe he was, I have no idea. Maybe they contributed to his death, I have no idea. But at the end of the day, you know that putting a large amount of weight on someone's neck is going to cut off their air and or their blood flow. That's a very common sense thing. If that's not something that's obvious to you, then you shouldn't be a police officer. But it has to play some contributing portion. I would be extremely hard pressed to believe that to be convinced that it did not at all. I don't know if that qualifies it as manslaughter at the very least. Obviously murder has to be like intentionally killing someone rather than accidentally, but I think this guy, Derek Chauvin, I think that's how you pronounce his last name. I think he's going to become, the face of police brutality for the next generation. It's just so blatant and so out there and just so wildly obvious that it was wrong. Like, there's a lot of police brutality videos that crop up and it's hard to tell context, and it's just a clip of 30 seconds to a minute of something that lasted for much longer than that. But in this case, it seems pretty wildly straightforward, I would say. And I definitely think there's going to be some unrest if he's not behind bars for a very long time. And something in a similar vein that I was thinking about earlier is that the riots, due to that and riots in other places, spurned a lot of liberals and Democrats to buy their first gun across the country. And I'm interested to know what those people, because I'm sure most, the vast majority of those people still own their guns. Maybe they sold them when riots died down, they needed money, who knows. But I imagine the vast majority of them still have them. And now people are becoming increasingly fed up with the lockdowns and all of these governors and other politicians having very minute, nuanced control, or trying to exert minute control over people's lives. And I think, like I've said in the past, I think a lot of them are getting red-pilled. And it's interesting to consider how those people now see them, through what lens they see themselves as gun owners, right? Because originally it was to, protect themselves and their immediate family, ostensibly against rioters, looters, what have you, those kinds of people that are out, to ruin someone's day or life, or are just plain reckless with private property. But now that's kind of transitioned to more of a threat of authoritarianism. And do I think that all those people are suddenly going to become, hard right-wingers or libertarians? No, probably not. But I imagine that realization has gone through, you know, at least a few of their heads, which is interesting to see. And I don't know what would become of that, you know, if lockdowns got more strict, if people's liberties were, you know, reduced even further, you know, suddenly the people on the right who were allegedly, you know, anti-government to begin with, you know, they suddenly have an ally and, you know, people across the aisle who are also gun owners now and ultimately fear for their liberty in addition to their safety. I saw that, I believe it happened yesterday, that Mike Pence announced that they've now come up with a name for members of the Space Force, which is Guardians. A lot of people are having hot takes about that. I have admittedly have not done a lot of reading about Space Force. You know, on its face, it seems kind of silly. Because I guarantee that there are already people basically without job. Because I would assume the premise is like, you know, space is this unregulated, as far as governments are concerned, area. And, you know, to have a presence there, it's like air superiority and, you know, how pivotal that was in the world wars over ships and tanks and stuff like that. I think space is just another level to that, no pun intended. So I imagine everyone wants a piece of that, you know, in a military context. But I guarantee there are already ICBMs in space. I don't know that for a fact. Let me Google that, because that's a wild claim. Oh, so maybe not. The Verge. When was this posted? Oh, this is 2019. So I guess there's no, you know, pre-existing system to intercept nukes from space. So maybe that's the impetus for a space force. But either way, there are still people, they already exist, and those jobs already exist to monitor space for things like that, with no shortage of satellites monitoring these kinds of things, monitoring our own airspace, other countries' airspace, just zipping around Earth. So it just seems like a bit of a political stunt, and I don't know to what end that is, but it just seems like a strange distraction. And how about old pictures of Mayor Pete surfacing, of like posing kind of, I guess, seductive is, doesn't feel like the right word, but it's the first word that comes to mind, in front of a Holocaust museum somewhere. And I didn't see a lot of people talking about it. Certainly no one on the left talking about it. But it was, I guess, someone found it on his husband's Instagram from several years ago. And he's just standing in the middle of this Holocaust museum. And he's looking back at the camera like he's, I don't know, like it's a Tinder or a Grindr profile picture. Like he's looking kind of, you know, suggestive. You know, it's very minor. Is, you know, should we make a big stink about it? Probably not. It's just, it's a picture. But I feel like the important part, it plays into something more important, which is that it really irritates me when people glamorize politicians, and you know, they're like pseudo celebrities. You know, I get it, they exert a different type of influence over people, but arguably it's a lot more consequential because it becomes law, and you know, law is law. But politicians are people too. They make horrific choices. They are not infallible by any stretch of the imagination. And they can, you know, they frequently can't read the room either. So it does a good job to humanize them, I think, because I think we have gotten away from, you know, we are far removed from politicians who used to, like, politicking used to be a side job for them because it didn't pay 100+K a year. And now being a politician is a, you know, a good way to get pretty damn wealthy. Like, they're, Biden's worth, what, 10 or 20 million? Obama's probably worth 100 plus million. Let's see. $40 million. That's like, you know, that's nothing to sneeze at. Oh, celebritynetworth.com, 70 million. Whew. So these aren't like normal people anymore in the sense that they can relate to our, you know, financial problems of the middle class America, but they're not celebrities. They shouldn't be treated as such, and they're 100% infallible. And a lot lately I've been thinking about this Thomas Sowell. I'm not sure how to pronounce his last name. The black economist. He said, every fiasco, I'm paraphrasing here, every fiasco that we've ever ended up in has been due to experts. And I think you can add politicians to that as well. So I think people really need to get back to criticizing politicians more heavily, monitoring them a lot more heavily, and stop treating them like celebrities. Like when AOC is streaming Among Us on Twitch, like, I don't give a shit. That makes her more relatable to some of her base, sure. That doesn't imply that she's a great politician or, you know, has any type of real clout necessarily in Congress. So it just kind of annoys me. Talk about seeing right through people. I guess suddenly McConnell now cares about people, which is laughable, considering how obstinate he's apparently been in regards to a relief bill. And now he's talking about, and you know, in the face of a government shutdown, you know, getting down to brass tacks with Democrats and sorting things out for the American people so they can get relief. So, although, even if you gave people the same check as last time, that's still, in my mind, a bit of a slap in the face. Because that would be $2,400 across, what, 9 months of on and off lockdowns and economic decline? That's a bit of a joke. Certainly a better than nothing for a lot of people who are probably very close to the bottom of the barrel as far as their savings goes. Luckily, that hasn't applied to me and my wife or anyone in my close family, but for some people, that makes a big difference. But that's still, I feel like it's too little too late, I guess, ultimately. And then, of course, there was some Republican who is giving some pushback on it because he suddenly cares about the deficit, as if we weren't dick deep in that even before the first stimulus bill and all the money printing associated with that. That's kind of a joke. That seems like a moot point at this point. I mean, obviously more money printing isn't better, and not having printed those trillions of dollars for the $1,200 check would like make things so much better. Like, that wasn't the straw that broke the camel's back, but like, it was already pretty heavy at that point. So drawing the line in the sand here seems kind of disingenuous, I guess. And Boris Johnson in London were trending on Twitter today, and I was curious as to why that was. And apparently they have different tiers of lockdowns for various, I guess we can just call them regions. I don't know if you can call them counties, or I don't know how it works in the UK and England. But anyhow, there are lots of cities, I think London included, and a couple of other big cities that were, and I've achieved a new tier, I think that's tier 4, wherein people can't congregate in their homes. That's like, I guess, beyond the people who live there or something to that extent. And people are extrapolating it as Boris Johnson canceling Christmas if you can't have a congregation of people outside, which is wild to me, being an American. But I have to remind myself that, like, Britain doesn't have a Bill of Rights, which just fundamentally is crazy to me that, like, theoretically speaking, that the government could do whatever I want, people would have no legal recourse. But then you could say, you know, what would a constitution or what a Bill of Rights really matter if no one is willing to fight for it, right? Like, if British people are rolling over due to the lockdowns because they have to, is that really functionally any different from Americans who are rolling over in the wake of unconstitutional, edicts on the part of governments because they're too scared to speak up? Like at the, it results in the same thing at the end of the day. So I guess my point is that, the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, they're just pieces of paper. They're just pieces of paper unless you enforce them. I had a teacher in high school, Paul Turney. Shout out to Paul. When we would talk about like treaties and tariffs and things like that, and he would always say, those are only as strong as your ability to enforce them. And I think that can be said in the opposite direction for things like the Bill of Rights. They're only as strong as you're willing to defend them. If no one defends it, then it's just a historical piece of paper that doesn't carry any weight or meaning. That's the whole thing. And I wish people would remember that. And I saw a tweet today that was kind of hit home with me, even if it wasn't like entirely accurate, which was something like, you can vote away your rights, but in order to get them back, you have to start war. Which isn't quite the same as what I'm talking about here, but like it's a similar sentiment. It's e easy to give these things up an inch at a time until you realize you're a mile behind where the line used to be, and you got a lot of room to make up. And then there was this Bill de Blasio quote from a press conference that he did that raced around pretty quickly about him wanting to redistribute wealth, which is pretty wildly on the nose, even for, a Democratic mayor in a Democratic city, excuse me. But like I think the kind of ironic part is that that's 100% happening, but I don't think it's happening in the way that he means it, because we have all of these small businesses going out of business, and now rather than having the opportunity of buying local or buying regional, people now have to buy online. So Amazon, Walmart.com, department stores, big box stores, instead of mom and pop. So now all of these presumably billions and billions of dollars who were initially staying, circulating around in local economies are now slowly getting funneled outwards to these giant corporations. And it's pretty obvious. I mean, all of their stocks have skyrocketed. I mean, a lot has. The S&P and Dow Jones and NASDAQ, all that stuff is up really big, which is just another crazy disconnect in my opinion, but that's a conversation for another time probably. But all those companies have had like crazy profits in the past several quarters, and Jeff Bezos and other billionaires in similar positions, all of their personal wealth has increased insanely since lockdown started. So yeah, there is 100% redistribution of wealth, but it's against people's wills, and it's in the direction of people who are already insanely wealthy. And obviously that's not right. It just goes back to like not standing up for the lockdown to begin with. It's people should always have a choice. But I'm wondering at what point, the stimulus is going to become so inadequate for people who are originally in favor of a lockdown, assuming a stimulus came with it, that they will start making the same arguments that, right of center and libertarians are making, which is transitioning from the government isn't supporting us during this lockdown like they should be, to the government or the lockdown isn't right and isn't constitutional. I think that's slowly going to happen, especially if the lockdown continues on and or gets more stringent in more and more places, and or people become, more personally desperate and their family members become more desperate as more and more businesses close. People can't work, people have to shut down their businesses. It's just kind of chaos. And then I can't remember who posted the article. I wanted to say it was the Times. People were talking about the article itself wasn't acting as a proponent of this, at least not overtly. I didn't read it very thoroughly. I just kind of skimmed it because a lot of people were quote tweeting it. It was talking about how there's a lot of like debate and discussion about who should get vaccines first and like what constitutes an essential worker and what's the purpose of the vaccine. Is it to save lives or is it to, keep people in work or a mix of the two? Like what type of age group should we be looking at if we, should just go straight for the old people who are in precarious health situations, or if we just go straight for frontline workers, or people who work in grocery stores. It's a legitimate question, I guess, even though it's wild to think that, assuming the corona the virus the vaccine is good, that like we have to prioritize some people's lives over others, which is just a crazy position to be in to begin with. And I don't know that there's any really great answer to it. And I don't know what the disparity is between number of doses and number of people. I mean, I'm sure they're making it more all of the time. But anyhow, this article was putting forth a bunch of opinions on the part of people at the CDC, people at the like academics and all this other stuff. And there was one guy who was the article called him an expert in ethics. And he only had like a paragraph or two within this larger article. So it was really just a snippet, but it was pretty damning. And he said, again, I'm paraphrasing, that he said the vaccine should distribution should basically be dependent upon race. So we shouldn't give it to old people because old people tend to be white, which I guess is him saying that like life expectancy is slightly longer for white people, which might be the case. That's a pretty horrific argument though, because I don't see how unfairness is ever going to cause or create fairness. Like I don't think there's any great answer because everyone who wants a vaccine should be able to get one, and obviously that's not the case, at least not immediately. And everyone's going to feel like they're important, just as important as the next guy, and there's going to be a lot of animosity about different types of people and when they're allowed to get it, and how far down the list they are, basically. But like, that's definitely the wrong answer. Don't give it to grandma because grandma's fucking white. That's so shitty. And I think that just kind of plays into the whole like woke culture that comes out of academia frequently on the part of these people who just are entirely in academia and so they spend their life in nothing but theory and they just swim in their own circles for so long and so tightly that like they just come up with this wild shit that's so disconnected from everybody else. And as evidenced by how quickly this raced around and how people thought it was absolutely abhorrent. But that guy's probably tenured and he's not going anywhere and he's gonna keep thinking of shitty stuff like that. But balance the scales. Don't give it to grandma. Because it feels like that was that was the argument to begin with. Save the old people. Save the people who are not healthy. We love grandma and we want her, we want to be able to see her, right? And now it's don't give it to grandma because she's probably white. That's crazy. Like, I feel like if you're gonna go out on that limb, why don't you just go out to the end and say, don't give it to white people? Balance the scale that way. That's so wild to me that like it's hard even to like interact with it in good faith without just like getting pissed off. I just don't even know. But I mean, I know that's just one person's opinion, but there's probably other people with that opinion and they've said it and I haven't seen it, or they maybe know better than to say it out loud, but that's just wild that someone would have that opinion. Someone who is supposedly extremely educated and an expert on ethics. Holy shit. That's like the most painfully ironic part of it. And I feel like people are really starting to see like the consequences of bad leadership and bad, you know, political motive and political execution. Like there is now a vote to recall Gavin Newsom, the governor of California, and it has a lot of votes. I think it's pushing a million. Let me see real fast. 55% of their goal. What is their goal? Over 800,000 signed petitions. That's a lot of people. Wow, they got a whole website. Yikes. Will that? I don't know what the I don't know if that goes to a referendum afterwards, if it gets X number of votes, or what happens with that. But I mean, people are really unhappy with him, and really unhappy with governors in other places like Cuomo, for instance. I think him and Gavin are probably the biggest two and the biggest targets of criticism. You know, and it's like they kind of bring it on themselves. They feel like they are in position to make edicts which are not backed by law or the Constitution or anything, and people are just letting them do it, which is wild to me. You know, probably because, you know, they fear the police, and rightly so, because all of this immunity that you know, police enjoy, I think, tends to embolden them, if anything. And it's just, it's going down, but people are starting to see the consequences of these like poor political choices. And like now they have a new autonomous zone, and I think that's Portland, called the RAS, which was interesting to me because of how it allegedly initially started, which was to keep an eviction from happening because that person who lived there was out of work due to the lockdown. And it's like, yeah, why are police trying to enforce evictions right now, which they may have caused? And then I guess it came out that like that wasn't truly the case, and like maybe it was factual but not truthful, which is a phrase from Michael Malice that I love. I think about it a lot in terms of how things are posed in mainstream media and in news articles and stuff. But anyhow, so now there's like a new autonomous zone. It doesn't seem very obvious to me why this one exists, although I wasn't sure about the initial one either. I mean, maybe just to keep cops out ultimately, which, I mean, okay. But like if you're trying to get away from fascism and then you like beat people to death and or shoot them, which I believe happened in Chaz, the original autonomous zone, then guess what? Congratulations, you just became a fascist. Like you're using force to coerce people and guns and intimidation, physical violence. And you just went full circle in like a couple of weeks, which I just don't understand why these local authorities, like Portland, for example, and these autonomous zones, why these DAs and mayors just roll over for these, you know, ultimately unreasonable people. Because, you know, initially appeasing them doesn't seem to help, right? Because in Portland, they were, you know, I'm pretty sure they were harassing the... not harassing, but like they were protesting outside the mayor's house. Like even though that mayor is already very, very liberal and left-leaning, like whatever they gave the people, because I'm not sure of their gender, whatever they gave the people, I guess it wasn't enough. And it probably never would be until they're fully, I don't know, communist or socialist or something like that, which I don't think can really reasonably happen on that small scale. Not that they're in a legal position to do so, but it's just, I don't know what the point is of these types of places. And it just seems confusing, like, just a bad use of energy. Like, if you want to get something done, get fucking organized about it. It's really that simple. That's another quote that I think of a lot. A small group of organized people can outplay and out-strategize a large group of unorganized people, especially when they have an end goal in mind. Kind of unrelated news, not directly related. Bitcoin has hit a new all-time high and then smashed through it. The original all-time high was about 20 grand, like 19,900, and now it's at, I think 23,000 and change, 22,000 and change, which is wild. I'm a major Bitcoin proponent as an investment, but also a little more fundamentally as a kind of a philosophy, actually, truly. Like a borderless, permissionless, uncensorable. Well, I guess it could be censored, but that's like a very technical argument. Hard currency that no one can take away from you. No one can keep you from using it. You know, we've seen instances of a lot of people getting unbanked, a lot of people being barred from social media, which is, some other people would argue, is a public utility at this point, but that's very complicated. I'm not in a position to argue that one way or the other. But people are becoming censored on social media. They're becoming barred from it entirely. They're becoming unbanked. A lot of, it's notably a lot of adult actors and actresses have been unbanked because banks don't want to, take their money. I don't understand the reasoning behind that. But I think that will increasingly become a mode of censorship for the government and for people who, organizations that don't want to deal with people. They'll, you'll be able to say whatever you want online, but as soon as you say it, there's going to be some legal consequences, which is, Chase or whoever else not doing business with you and not having to, produce a reason for it. So that's one of the big reasons why I'm such a Bitcoin proponent. The fact that it's skyrocketing in value is pretty satisfying, and kind of validating, especially for people like my parents who are have zero interest in it, despite being, reasonably savvy investors and all this other stuff. I tried really hard to get my dad into it, who is pretty active in the stock market, doing swing trading or something like that, like low time frame trading. And he's like, yeah, I don't understand it, so I'm not interested in it. I was like, that's not understanding it isn't a good reason to not try to understand something. Otherwise we'd never learn anything, but that's a whole other thing. But I hope more and more people adopt Bitcoin, if only for a method of paying someone or receiving payment for services. No one can take it away from you. No authoritarian government can say no. Even as Venezuela's currency has collapsed, people month over month use more and more Bitcoin, which is great to see. That's what it was made for, to be a good currency. But this is turning into a Bitcoin rant, and I don't want to do that. But if you made it this far, thanks for listening. I really appreciate it. You can find me on Twitter at Leibniz was first, LEIBNIZ was first, or on my website at thomasedgeman.com. And these are posted on YouTube, on my personal YouTube page, Thomas Edgeman, as well as on Spotify. Thank you for listening.